Do you know what you believe? Like, really know it? Like, you could go and explain it to somebody else. Do you feel like you could give an answer if somebody asked you why you believe a certain way that you do? Why do you believe that God is God or Jesus is his son or the Holy Spirit helps to make you more like Jesus? Do you understand how all of those things work? What about the end times or the role of the church in our everyday lives, of the role of the offices in the church? What's a pastor? What's an elder? What we believe can and should impact every area of our life. But too many of us just go through life without ever thinking deeply about what we believe. This is why you need a personal statement of faith. And this episode will help you make one. I hope you join me. Welcome to A More Beautiful Life Collective podcast. We know that in the hectic hurry of everyday life, it's easy to lose sight of what really matters. This is a moment to pause and realign your focus on the one who gives us peace and rest. We're focusing on discipleship, productivity, and homemaking as we live with eternity in mind. This is the place where you'll learn to create a life you love and cultivate your heart for God. I'm Casey Fletcher. Thanks so much for joining me. Hey everyone, and this is season 1, episode 30 of A More Beautiful Life Collective podcast. What we're talking about today is how to create your personal statement of faith. This is part of our series on why what you believe matters. And today we are jumping in with the first step in that process. Again, you can go to the shop at amorebeautifullifecollective.com/AMBL shop to get copies of any of the workbooks that we mentioned in this episode or any other episode. There's lots of great resources on there, from budget sheets to decluttering worksheets to Bible studies that will help you to create a life you love and cultivate your heart for God. If you haven't yet, please leave a 1-2 sentence rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This just helps others find the show, and I would appreciate it so much. Now, on to the episode. So in the last episode, we talked about this method of Christian living. Again, the method of Christian living is a way to take what we believe and apply it to our lives by thinking deeply about our statement of faith, the core Christian virtues we think we should base our lives on, and creating guiding principles from those virtues. Then we take these things and we apply them every day with discernment. So we have this kind of flexible method for how we live our lives. This is just basically looking at how our faith, our Christian faith, affects everything that we do. And so the first step in the process is creating your personal statement of faith. This is a crucial task for all Christians. What we believe matters. And so the first thing that we need to do is we need to know what we believe. We know that what we believe is important, but all too often we allow other people to tell us what to believe. We allow our pastor, our church, the podcast that we listen to, books, we allow them to tell us what we believe. And we may not even realize that they are telling us their theological standpoint when we listen to them. 2 Timothy 4:3-4 says, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables." So we don't want to have our truth turned into fables, and we don't want people just to tell us whatever our itching ears want to hear. We want to know the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And so this is why we need to create a statement of faith, so that we're ready to give an answer for what we believe, ready to be able to defend our beliefs. So we got to do the work. We have to do the work of understanding what we believe. Today, we're going to talk about three things. We're going to talk about what doctrine and theology are, giving a very basic overview of what those things are, the basic foundational concepts. Then we're going to talk about why we can't just use our church's statement of faith, and why you need to write your own to create a personal statement of faith. And then lastly, we're going to talk about how to create that personal statement of faith. Again, if you would like a copy of your create your own personal statement of faith workbook, you can go to amorebeautifullifecollective.com/AMBL shop and you'll find it on there. You can also get a one sheet printout of a page where you can write your own statement of faith for the things that we are talking about. If you subscribe to the blog, you can see a link for that in the show notes. So first, let's start off with these very basic ideas, these foundational concepts. So the first thing we have to talk about is what is doctrine? You know, I'm talking about this personal statement of faith. and I say a personal statement of faith is founded on the doctrines that you believe. Some of us are very familiar with that term. Some of us may not know what that means. A doctrine is basically just a belief that you have. It's actually from the word in Latin that says doctrina, which means teaching or learning. So interestingly, this is where the word doctorate comes from, and doctor, because and docere means to teach. So basically, doctrine is instruction, specifically as it applies to lifestyle application. So in Christian circles, doctrine, like if I got up on at a pulpit, you know, or if I was talking at church and giving a sermon and I said doctrine, in Christian circles, it normally means spiritual matters and concepts. So these basic beliefs that we have. But I think it's interesting if you think about doctrine, doctrine is meant for instruction. So doctrine, a lot of times it's people, the way they describe it is that it's very high level kind of theology. It has no application to everyday life. But the whole idea of doctrine is that it's something that's created in order to edify and equip us and instruct us in the way that we should live. So a doctrine is just a set of beliefs that the church teaches to apply to our lives. And it encapsulates most of what we hear about whenever we think about Christian beliefs. The Bible, particularly the epistles, discusses the importance of doctrines. You know, there are some things that we talk about that is not really mentioned very much in the Bible at all, but the word doctrine is mentioned quite a bit. And it's particularly in the epistles, whenever it says it was mentioned 50 times in the Bible with a distinct call to ward against false doctrine. Most of the time, whenever it's mentioned, it's talking about making sure you have the right doctrines. The Bible says of itself, so this is in 2 Timothy 3:16, it says that it's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction, and in righteousness. We are to be careful what you believe and present as truth. 1 Timothy 4:16 says, "Watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers." So again, this idea of having correct doctrines is incredibly important. And the Bible really hammers this idea home. This is something that the Bible preaches. And so I think if the Bible repeats this multiple times, we need to make sure that we are listening and following that. So what types of things are doctrines? You know, what should your personal statement of faith be about? Well, doctrines, again, are foundational beliefs, and it seems like it can encapsulate anything. But just like we talked about with our method in the last episode, if it encompasses anything, it really encompasses nothing. We got to kind of narrow it down so that we understand what is actually really important and what isn't so important. And so you can search for core doctrines on, you know, Christian beliefs. And it's actually hard to narrow down a number to specific doctrines that everybody agrees on. You can find anywhere from 7 to 10 to even 99 key points or doctrines. And so I'm going to narrow it down for you to 10 things. And this is a common list. You could probably find this in a lot of different places. But these are the 10 things that I'm going to stick with. This is in what our workbook is on. And so you can download that workbook if you want to develop these a little bit more. But I'll read these to you. So the first one is the doctrine of God. And I really like the terms. You know, some people now try to get away from any of the kind of terms that they use in like academia. But I think it's important that you know these terms, because if you are in circles or if you're reading, you know, theology books and they're going into things, you want to know what they're talking about and not get so hung up on the terminology that you don't understand the things that they are referring to. So as we go through this, I'll tell you what it is, like the doctrine of blank, but then I'll also tell you the term that they use in common Christian circles, especially theology workbooks. So the doctrine of God is theology proper. So it's the study of the nature of God and his works. Then you have the doctrine of the Bibles, so bibliology, and it's the study of the doctrine laid out in the Bible and scripture. Then you have the doctrine of angels, angelology. My husband said that was kind of a silly name, but that's what it is. It's the investigations of angels and angelic appearances. The doctrine of man is theological anthropology, which is the study of human relationship with God, including investigations of the body, soul, and spirit. The doctrine of sin and evil is hermeneutology, which if any of these, if I'm pronouncing it wrong, I'm just going to say it like I'm saying it. you can correct me in your head in the comment below on what I'm pronouncing wrong. But this is the doctrines of sin and morality. Interestingly, the Satanology, which is what I would think is of as evil as well, they actually lump this in with angelology, because I guess Satan is a fallen angel. And so because of that, you know, you could kind of lump that in with either group. Whenever I created my workbook, I actually put that study about where evil comes from in hermeneutology, but I guess that's really only focusing on sin. The next one is the doctrine of Christ, Christology, which is, you know, looking at Jesus Christ, his life, nature, teachings, and legacy. The doctrine of salvation is soteriology, and that's the study of the doctrines of salvation and redemption, so how that works. The doctrine of the Holy Spirit is pneumatology, which is investigating the nature and role of the Holy Spirit. The doctrine of the church is ecclesiology, which is the study of the church and its origins and its historical and current roles. And then last one is the doctrine of the end times, which is eschatology, which is a study of the end times and the apocalypse. So you could see how these 10 beliefs, they really encompass everything. There's some things that, like maybe covenant theology, you could kind of group those in with certain ones. But I think it's good to have just 10 or some number around that, because then that way you can really break down each one and you can make bite-sized statements of faith that you can remember, because that's the goal, is you want to write out all of these things and you want to remember this. That's the whole point of catechisms and things like that in the past, is that they were trying to create a system of faith, a systematic theology that you would actually remember, where it's not something where you feel kind of lost whenever somebody refers to it. So your personal statement of faith would work through these 10 core doctrines and would write what you believe about each one of those things. Now, as we've been talking about this, you might be thinking, what is theology? Isn't that the same thing as doctrine? And it is, kind of, sort of. So theology is the study of God and really everything related to that. So anything in Christian faith. But basically, theology, it encompasses all doctrines, but theology itself is not doctrine. So doctrine you can think of as like a sentence or a statement of faith. Theology is much more general. And so it talks about a lot of other different types of things. So doctrine, again, is normally used for teaching. So you can think of like with new believers or any kind of thing related to instruction. Then theology is more expansive. So doctrines are specific to certain topics like God, man, you know, all of the things we just mentioned, whereas theology is, again, more general. In the 19th and 20th centuries, theology was divided into four different categories or branches. You got to remember, but you know, before in the Middle Ages and things like that, theology was really one of the main things that was studied. It was like the reason for universities. And so in years past, you know, they just kind of flipped. So the study of nature always reflected back to the study of God as creator. And there was not really divisions in theological branches. But as I guess theology got more specific just to the Christian faith, then they decided to divide it up. I guess this also goes with like in the 1700s and 1800s, they wanted to classify anything anyway. So they decided to classify different types of theology. And so they created four branches, which I think are helpful in dividing up some of the studies. And so the four different branches of theology are biblical theology, which is the study of the Bible's teachings, both individually and as a unified whole. Historical theology, which is the study of accumulated teachings of the church over time. So if you think about like any kind of development of different types of theology, especially like the Trinity and things that were developed much later in church history, the historical theology would trace the development. I'm reading a book that's kind of massive and a little bit over my head called The Holy Trinity by Robert Latham. And it goes into this idea of tracing the development of a theology throughout time and kind of, you know, how people were wrong at times and then right at times, and how, you know, what is orthodox and what is heresy shifts as time goes on. So that is an interesting way of viewing some doctrine. The next one is systematic theology. So your statement of faith will look kind of like systematic theology, where any book that goes into systematic theology, they try to start at one point and kind of hit these core doctrines one by one in kind of an ordered, unified fashion, kind of move you through all of those things. So again, your statement of faith, as you are developing it, you're basically going through and doing your own systematic theology study. Last one is practical theology. And I use this term a lot in the last episode. Practical theology is basically what I like to think of it as is it bridges the gap. It's the theology that bridges the gap between these the study and this knowledge and ministry. So practical theology, it includes subfields such as applied theology, church growth, administration, spiritual formation, pastoral theology, spiritual direction, spiritual theology, political theology, all of these other kinds of theologies. But basically, I just think of it as, you know, you have biblical theology, historical theology, and systematic theology that go into the knowledge aspect of it. And then you got to say, okay, how does this apply to Christian living? And specifically, ministry. And so a lot of the practical theology is for like pastors, like how do you do church growth in a biblical way? So you'll draw from all types of theology in order to create your statement of faith and in your life generally. But really, systematic theology is the one that you're going to be leaning on to do this. That's basically what you're doing. You're creating your own little systematic theology study. So how do you create your personal statement of faith? Well, there's lots of different ways that you could do this. But again, what I would say is you're using this idea of systematic theology and you're going through the doctrines that I mentioned one by one. Now, what I think is helpful is to first find your church's statement of faith and let that be kind of the springboard for what you're going to do. Then after you read through your church's statement of faith, you're going to examine those beliefs and say, okay, I agree with this one, I don't agree with this one, and go through that. And then for anything that you're unsure of, you are going to search out the answer. So you're going to read books, listen to podcasts, listen to sermons, and try to figure out what you believe. And then finally, you'll write out that eventual statement of faith, that eventual doctrine of belief. So again, I'm calling this your personal statement of faith because I think it's incredibly important that you make your faith personal, that you realize that you don't just go to a church and never know what you believe, that you need to know what you believe and know why you believe that. But the danger in that is you can get some, you know, way out in left field ideas. I've seen people do that where they kind of go down this path where they're like, oh, I'm just exploring. And then they end up in this place. It's like, you're not even Christian anymore because you're off in La La Land. You need to make sure that you're kind of hemming yourself in. And the best way to do that is to go through this process with some kind of accountability. So even though I'm not saying that your church's statement of faith is the right statement of faith, I think it's important that maybe you ask somebody, whether that's a pastor or a close friend, to say, hey, I'm just going through this. I'm trying to figure out what I believe and make sure I understand why I believe what I believe. And so that way, if you come up with an idea that's clearly unbiblical, but maybe you're just not aware of that, somebody else can call you out on that. And I think that's important. So even though it's a personal statement of faith, I would not advise going through this process alone because you might end up with some crazy ideas and you don't want that. So the first thing that you need to do is you need to read through your church's statement of faith or maybe a church denomination statement of faith. Different churches function differently. And so sometimes your statement of faith would be like a denominational statement. So on your church denomination, I'm very much kind of in my own little circle. And so I didn't even realize that this was kind of a question, but somebody that I saw on Facebook, you know, they had a list of this person posted a post and they said, okay, here are my must-haves for church. Like it needs to have a good kids program, needs to have, you know, I think they said thumping worship bands, so drums and all. And it needs to be non-denominational. And so somebody else, they posted, what does non-denominational mean? Does that just mean like they can believe like anything, like Buddhist and like Islam and all that kind of stuff? And to me, I was like, what? I didn't realize that some people didn't know this idea of denomination. So I think it's important to kind of talk about this here, just so that everybody understands what this is. We're in such a unique, interesting position in modern churches and modern Christianity. We, most of the time, we don't go to church because of location or family history or state law or fear of social pressure or retribution. We just go where we like to go. And if we have friends, that's where we'll probably go. If none of our friends are there, we'll probably pick the one that we think is the best. But again, I would say the place you go is probably where your friends go. And if you don't have friends at a church, you're probably going to leave that church and you'll go to where your friends are. So I think we're very relationally based. Sometimes we can go, again, for the atmosphere. But you notice what I'm not saying. We're not going to a church because we agree with what they believe in, for the most part. That's not true for everybody. And I know it's not true for everybody. But I would say for most people, you're not going because you went through and read their statement of faith and decided this is where I want to go. But I would say that should be your first requirement. And that is something that is kind of countercultural in modern day Christianity. You don't first look at a statement of faith and look at how they're doing it and say, yeah, is this, you know, the way I believe a church runs, whether that's by, you know, vote, does your congregation vote? Do you have elders? If a church is not running the way that you believe they should run, should you attend that church? I don't know. But that is something that you have to think about. You have to think about how much what you believe is actually going to impact your everyday life. So most of us never really look at anything related to beliefs whenever we're picking out a church. But I think it's important that we do that. Church denominations are basically just an autonomous branch of a church that's like recognized, like they filed as a autonomous branch. So basically, each denomination has its own rules and regulations for things like choosing pastors. Some places, they actually, you apply to be like part of a pool of pastors and they put you in a church. Other places, this is what my church does, a pastor gets, you know, voted in, or they have like a board come in. Again, some churches have boards, some don't have boards of, you know, officers and different things like that. Every denomination has its own rules for connecting with others, a system of beliefs. Most are also like a separate tax entity as well. There's actually close to 200 major Christian denominations in the U.S. And it's interesting, I found an article about, you know, the scandal of Protestant Christianity is the disunity. It was talking about like the Reformation 400 years after the fact, but it was written from a Catholic perspective instead of, you know, I'm more used to listening to like a Protestant perspective. And so it talked about like the scandal of disunity. It was talking about this number, this 200 major Christian denominations, and it was referencing that as being a scandal. And I thought that was just interesting. You can find a link to that on the blog if you want to read more about it. But you should know what denomination you're a part of. And you should have a look at your church's statement of faith. I bring up denominations because denominations can affect a lot of what we believe. And so if you don't know like what a Methodist denomination means or what Presbyterian means, you really should see what you're a part of. And part of this is too, like this was, I think it's the Southern Baptist Convention, you know, they just voted about something to do with women pastors. And so a lot of denominations, you know, if you do have kind of like this where they go as a conference and they vote on things as a conference, my church has this as well. Those conferences can decide a lot of what is going on as far as your missions projects are and other things like that. So you also need to know like what conference you're a part of. Non-denominational churches generally are not a part of a bigger entity as a whole. A lot of times they're kind of like satellite branches, right? So they have their main campus and then have satellite branches. So they kind of make their own mini conference, but they're basically, it's more like a franchise operation or something like that. But you should know what denomination you're a part of, what conference, if you are a part of one, what they believe. Most non-denominational churches, they're kind of like an evangelical bent. Generally, I feel like they're basically like Baptist churches, but they're just not a part of the Baptist convention. But you need to know what they believe as well. And I do think that one of your main qualifications for what church you're a part of is what belief that church holds. Like you need to know what they believe and you need to make sure that you agree with that. If a church matches your beliefs, then you can work to help strengthen it. If they don't, you don't necessarily need to leave. Depending on what those beliefs are, maybe they would be something that you would think would be worthwhile to leave, but you can also kind of guide them to the right beliefs depending on what they are and how big that church is. All right, so the next thing you need to do, step two, is to examine those beliefs to understand them. So that's the first step, is make sure that you don't just say, I don't agree with this, but I don't really know what it means. So I'm just going to, you know, go argue with somebody or say, okay, just forget it. First, you just want to understand the belief. The next thing is you should determine whether you agree with that belief or disagree with it. So the church statement of faith is kind of like you're jumping off, but that's just the beginning of your journey. Then you need to figure out, okay, do I agree with this or do I disagree with it? Now, you might say, well, why shouldn't I just copy my church's statement of faith and make that my own personal statement of faith? Well, and here's the main reason, is that if you just copy it, I would be afraid that you would never actually know what that statement of faith is saying. If you've never looked into concepts like the Trinity or like redemption and what you believe about redemption and salvation and things like that, you may just accept words without really understanding what those things actually mean. And then if you research it and understand it better, you might actually see that either you have a better understanding yourself, or you might actually start to change what you believe about certain things. So I think the first thing that you really need to do is you need to understand what you believe. And that's why if you just copy it, I think you wouldn't understand it very well, because I think you would just accept it on face value. So you need to search out those beliefs. And if you search it out, again, the whole goal of this is that you are strengthening what you believe. So searching out your statement of faith will help you to understand it better. Again, our goal is not to deconstruct our beliefs, and our goal is not to change our convictions about our beliefs either, but our goal is just to understand our beliefs better and just kind of see where that takes you. So again, what I would do is I would print out your church's statement of faith. I'm going to do this process as well. I'm going to write my own personal statement of faith that I can post on the blog. So that'll be on the blog whenever I'm done with it. So I went to my church's webpage and I just printed out the statement of faith. And so I'm going to use that as I go through my workbook and fill it out. So I would print that out. You can also ask your pastor if you can't find that on like their website. So then the next thing for step three is you need to, if you decide, okay, I don't understand this, or I don't agree with it and I want to know better options, then you should go and you should research it. So the best place to do that is find books, YouTube videos, podcasts, sermons, ask people that you know, and just try to understand that a little bit better. You'll find that, you know, in the workbook, what I've done is I've listed out some like concepts, and I mentioned one, like covenant theology versus dispensationalism. I heard somebody talking about this and I was like, what's covenant theology? And I realized that really that is what I believe. But I didn't even really understand what those terms were. And I realized that several other people that I know are more like dispensationalists. And so I haven't even completely studied everything that I want to about this topic. But I think what you'll see is as you dive into creating your personal statement of faith, you'll see that there's new topics. So once you start talking about like covenant theology, then you start talking about credo versus pedo baptism. And then that will get you into other ideas. And so it just kind of is as you start to create your statement of faith, you'll see that you kind of dive into more things. And it will just make you understand why you believe what you believe a little bit better. Now, if you are like me and you're looking through things, trying to figure out what you believe, and you decide that, okay, I'm changing my convictions on something, what do you do then? What do you do if your personal statement of faith is different than your church's statement of faith? How do you figure out what's right? Well, the first thing that you should do is you need to listen to both sides of the argument. I think a lot of times what people do is they have this idea. So one thing I've studied a lot, and you know, I still am not quite ready to say I know exactly what I believe about this thing. But one thing I've studied a lot is looking at the difference between, free will versus, you know, this idea of sovereignty and kind of predestination, and this idea of there's like an open theology. And so just trying to figure out what I believe about the will of God. And so I think a lot of us, if you're saying, okay, I have this question, you know, is God sovereign over everything? Does he have a plan for everything? Or does he not? And is it more like an Arminian kind of view, or an open theology kind of view? And if you're looking at these, the first thing is, if all of those terms are unfamiliar to you, the first thing is you would just need to understand it. But then if you're trying to figure out the next step, figure out what you believe about those things, then you would need to go and listen to people that believe these things. So I wouldn't want to, if you're more like a Calvinist and you believe that God has, that his sovereignty means that he's predetermined some actions, either all of your actions or some of your actions, then if you are a Calvinist, you don't want to go and listen to a Calvinist describe what someone who is, you know, believes in open theology, you don't want to go and listen to somebody try to describe that from a Calvinist perspective, because the Calvinist obviously thinks that the other person is wrong. So you would need to listen to somebody who has that viewpoint in order to be able to understand what you believe about that topic. So you just need to listen to both sides. You know, I mentioned head covering. So if you are someone who is interested in head covering and you're trying to figure out what you believe, if you listen to someone who doesn't head cover describe why other people say they should head cover, it's probably not going to be a real view. It's going to be a little bit biased because the person doesn't head cover. And so this is why you need to listen to people from the perspective of somebody who actually holds that belief and figure out why they actually hold it. Otherwise, you're always going to get kind of a biased, skewed view. If you have decided that you maybe don't agree with what you used to agree with, maybe you're having some changing convictions, you might find that you are going to have to make certain changes in your beliefs. And this doesn't mean that you need to leave your church. I think sometimes, you know, your church, if what you believe really, really matters, shouldn't the other people in your church, if you believe that it's true, maybe other people need some guidance to that. So I'm not saying that you need to leave your church. That might be a decision that you have to make. I do think that sometimes it's important to hear these words, orthodoxy and heterodoxy. And the reason why is orthodoxy is, you know, a generalized or accepted belief or an authorized belief. But I would say that true orthodoxy should be a Bible-based belief, something that you can find in the Bible that's promoted in the Bible. And then heterodoxy is everything else. Generally, heterodoxy is something that is described as being like a heresy. But you have to remember, orthodoxy, I think, sometimes can get thrown around and used as kind of like a weapon. So you want to make sure that your beliefs are Bible-based, and that is like the best way to... it's the best litmus test for understanding what is true and what's not true. Because you have to think about doctrines in the past, things that used to be seen as key doctrines that you were not saved if you didn't believe, like belief in the Pope and things like that, the infallibility of the Pope. Now, most Protestants don't believe in. So you have to understand what is a true Bible-based belief and what is not. So last step is you just need to write out your personal statement of faith. So once you've gone through all of this process, you should write it out. What I would do is I would write it out on a piece of paper and then go through and memorize those, just like you would with a catechism or something like that. Maybe your whole family, because your whole family should probably believe the same thing, I would argue. And so maybe your whole family goes through and memorizes those. You teach them to your kids. One thing that I'm working on creating is a resource called a Bible notebook where you keep all of these different things. So like your statement of faith, your core values, core virtues, the guiding principles of your faith, any kind of character or Bible studies that you've done. And so I think having your personal statement of faith in a place that you refer back to again and again, it can be really useful in the sticking power of that statement of faith. So let's review. Whenever you are creating a statement of faith, you need to figure out the beliefs of your church or your denomination, and then you need to figure out whether you agree with them or disagree with them. If you disagree with them, you should research your beliefs. So listen to people, especially people that believe what they're trying to describe, instead of just people that are kind of painting, you know, straw men out of beliefs that they don't agree with. But research your beliefs, search out your beliefs, and then write out your statement of faith. We know that what we believe matters. And so doctrines are just sentences or statements that describe what we believe. And so it's up to us to make sure that we work to create a statement of faith that we remember, that has sticking power, that will go and then impact the rest of our lives. So if you are interested in creating your own statement of faith, you can get my Create Your Personal Statement of Faith workbook. on the blog at amorebeautifulcollective.com/AMBL shop. You can also get a quick cheat sheet of all those doctrines that I mentioned so that you can study them more. If you subscribe to the blog, you can get that at the show notes. So I hope you'll join me next week. Until next time, keep creating a life you love and cultivating your heart for God. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of A More Beautiful Life Collective podcast. If you haven't yet, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts to help others find the show. While you're there, you can like and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Don't forget to check out the blog in our store for more encouragement and resources on how to create a life you love and cultivate your heart for God. I'm Casey Fletcher, and I'll see you next week.